Good morning. This week we are learning Sota Daf Yud. We're going to start in the middle of Yud Amud Aleph and hope to actually finish Yud today. So we'll stay on track in that way. The weekly shiur from Masechet Sukkah, Sota, is sponsored by David and Paula Baumzer and Omo Construction, Building Futures. The breakfast is sponsored by Bagel Munch, Le'ili Nishmas, Shimon Ben Zev and Fega Bas Chaim, Zev Ben David, Sarah Bas Shalom, Chaim Ben Yehoshua, and Edel Bas Moshe Yosef. We are smack in the middle of a long strip of Agadata, just to orient ourselves and remind us how we even got here. So we started off on Chesamid Beis talking about Sota and the Mida Keneged Mida that is associated with the Sota and the things that happened to her correlate with the actions that she did. And talking about Mida Keneged Mida, so the Mishnah on Tesamid Beis shifted from the Mida Keneged Mida of Sota to the Mida Keneged Mida of Shimshon and of Shalom, and then continue with Moshe and Miriam, etc. And so we started with this tangent talking about Shimshon, and last week we spoke a lot about the story of Shimshon. And that's where we're going to continue a bit with Shimshon, but really shifting a lot today to talk about the Maisa of Yehuda and Tamar. That's going to be our next tangent for the day. So we are on Yud Amud Aleph, smack in the middle of the two dots, where it says, Tana Rabbanan, Chamisha Nivru Me'ein Dugma Shel Maila. That there were five people who had certain characteristics that were Ke'ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu, just that they were above average in a very specific area. V'kulan Laku Bahen, and all these people who had this specific area where they were above average, that was the specific thing where they were ultimately stricken. That Shimshon B'Kocho, Shimshon had a unique strength. Sha'ol B'Tzavaro, Sha'ol was uniquely tall. And Avshalom B'Sairo, Avshalom, as we said in the Mishnah, had a uniquely beautiful hair. Tzidkiyah Be'enav, Tzidkiyah's eyes were above average, maybe in their beauty, in their ability of vision. And Asa Biraglov, Asa, who was a Melech Yehuda, so his Biraglov, his legs, his feet were also above average as well. Rashi points out that while most of these we have proofs for, Shimshon we know that he was very strong, Avshalom, his hair, these are things that are in the Pesukim, and Shaul B'Tzavaro, but Rashi admits very honestly, Lo Yadana Minalan De Nishtana L'Shevach, I don't know where the makor is for Tzidkiyah's eyes being uniquely powerful, and Asa Biraglav also, there's no source in the Pesuk that Rashi can point to, which indicates that Tzidkiyah had unique eyes and Asa had unique legs, and the Marisha fills in for where Rashi was unsure. The Marisha points to Pesukim by or a Medrash by Tzidkiyah, which describes that he had like a cave that he would travel through in the middle of the night. So Marisha says it must be that he had this supervision that Tzidkiyah was able to see even in the darkness of the night when the average person couldn't. So the Marisha points to that as being a source for Tzidkiyah. He has a pasuk by Asa, which refers to by Yerat Seitz, that maybe he was very fast. So the Marisha fills in the place where Rashi was unsure. And the Gemara continues, pointing out not the source that they had this amazing thing, but what's the source that they were ultimately laku, that they were ultimately stricken specifically in that area. So the Gemara continues, Shimshon b'kocho, Shimshon in his strength, he was laku b'kocho, how do you know, d'chsib, b'yasar kocho me'alav, that we said last week in the story that he lost his strength, so that's how we see that he was stricken specifically in his unique koach, that's where he was ultimately had his downfall, he ultimately lost that. Sha'ol b'tzavaro, how do you know that Shaul was struck in his neck. Right, so familiar with Shaul committing suicide at the end of his life to prevent the enemies from capturing him and doing whatever they want and torturing him. So he gave his own life. I usually picture it as he fell on his stomach to kill himself or his heart. I don't know. That's what I would have thought. But Rashi says, no. Where did he fall? Presumably the place where swords are usually used. Usually swords are used to chop off heads. Hainu tzavar. So perhaps also that's an indicator that he was ultimately laku bitzavaro. His unique neck was also an area where he ultimately had his downfall as well. Or his death. Avshalom b'sairo k'dva'inam l'meimar l'kamon. So I was just foreshadowing Avshalom and how his end ultimately was from his hair. We hinted to that in the Mishnah last week on Tesamid Beis, and we're going to conclude with that on today's daf on Yudamid Beis on the bottom, the story of Avshalom, and how his death was ultimately due to his luscious, beautiful hair. That's what led to his end. So we're going to see that later on. Tzidkia be'eino v'chsiv es einai Tzidkiyahu iver. That Tzidkia, ultimately his eyes were gouged out by Nebuchadnezzar, and so that's how we see that his eyes, which were above average, that's where he ultimately had his end. And asa b'raglav v'chsiv rak le'ez ziknaso chala es raglav. That at the end of his life he had sick and his legs had an illness, so his unique legs were ultimately what he ultimately lost. What happened to Asa's legs? Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav, Sha'achzaso Padgara. That he had this illness called Padgara, maybe it's a gout, some of the Mepharshim say. That he had some foot disease, that's what ultimately happened to his legs. Amar Le Marzitra, the Braider of Nachman, the Rav Nachman. The Mar wants to know, Hechidami Padgara, what is this Padgara disease? What did it feel like? Mar is curious. Amar Le Kamacha Pabasar Hachai, it's like a needle into live flesh. Very painful. That's what the Padgara felt like. Gemara asks, how do you know? Mina yada, who told you what it feels like? So Gemara has three answers. It's very interesting. Ikeda Amri, Mechash Hava Chashbe. How do Rav Nachman know what Padgara felt like? Because he personally had this illness. So he knows what it felt like, because it happened to him once. Ikeda Amri, Me Rabe Shamale. Or maybe it didn't happen to him, but he had a Misora. Apparently they're passing on the Misora from his Revi about what this unique disease felt like. And the third answer, which is also fascinating, Ikeda Amri, Sod Hashem Liereyav Ubri Soda Hodiam. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him, he had a Ruach HaKodesh, Hashem told him what this disease felt like. He didn't have a personal story where it happened to him. He didn't have a Rebbe who told him, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave him this inkling, this Ruach HaKodesh, which we find that Hashem has a unique connection to Talmidei Chachamim and lets them know information that they shouldn't necessarily be aware of. We had this answer, if you remember, I guess a few weeks ago by now. We had on Daf Dalet, and Daf Dalet on the days the Gemara was discussing, we had a whole bunch of different opinions as to what's the shiur of Yichud. That how long does we have this, remember, it's talking about Sota, a wife, she can't be Miyache with a certain guy, otherwise she's going to be labeled as a Sota. So someone wants to know how long is considered Yichud, if she's alone with this guy, for what period of time is considered Yichud. The Gemara gives a whole bunch of suggestions as to what is the time frame with which we have to be concerned that they had Tashmish. What's the time frame for them to have had relations together? So Gemara gives all the different examples, and then Ben Azai says, oh, I think it's this. Ben Azai steps in and says, I think the Shear, the time frame for Tumah, for her to be with this guy is XYZ. And the Gemara asks Ben Azai, then Gemara Yavamo says, Ben Azai never got married. So how did Ben Azai know how long it takes to have Tashmish if he never personally had it? So Gemara says, maybe he did and he got divorced. Gemara gives the same two answers over here. Maybe May Rabbe Shamaleh heard it from his Rebbe, or also the Gemara gives the answer over there. Soda Hashem Nireyav, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave him Ruach HaKodesh to let him know the information that he had to know to Paskin Shailas. And so similarly over here as well by the Padgara, the foot disease. Okay, so Darash Rava, the Gemara Rava asks, Mipnei ma ne'enash Asa? Why did Asa, the Melech Yehuda, get punished with this disease? Mipnei she'asa angaria b'talmidei chachamim, that he put the talmidei chachamim to work. So Asa was the Melech Yehuda. At the same time, there was Basha, who was the Melech of the rest of Israel, and they didn't get along. And Basha had set up a whole bunch of stones to kind of like blockade Asa and Yehuda. And so Asa collected all the different people to get together to remove those stones to free Yehuda. So the pasuk says, "Ahamelech Asa hishmia es kol Yehuda ein naki." So Asa, the Melech Yehuda, collected and gathered all of the people of Yehuda, and ein naki, there was no one who was exempt from helping remove these stones and remove the blockade. So Gemara asks, "My ein naki? What does ein naki mean? That no one was exempt? Everyone had to do it?" So Amar Yehuda, Marav, Afilu Chasan Mechadaro veKala Mechupasa, even a Chasan and Kala who usually are not called to a Machames Rishus, but even they were called in, and the Gemara and the other Gersos add, and if it was them, then Kavachomer, even to Mechachamim, were also Ein Naki meant everyone, even a Chasan, even a Kala, even a Talmid Chacham, and that was the problem of Asa, that he got the Talmid Chachamim to be involved in the work, even though he should not have gotten them involved. That's why he had the Padgara, the foot disease. So the Gemara now says, back to, this is going to be the transition from Shimshon to Yehuda and Tamar. Now we're at the two dots on Yud and Aleph towards the bottom. Gemara says, Ksid vayered Shimshon Timnasa. The pasuk describes Shimshon having a Yerida, Shimshon going down to Timna, but also Ksiv, it says by Yehuda and Tamar, that hinei chamich ola Timnasa, that Yehuda was going up to Timna. So where could Timna possibly be geographically? Do you go downwards to Timna? Do you go upwards to Timna? L'chora, everybody is in Eretz Yisrael. Everyone's in the same general place, and one person had to go up together, one person had to go down together. How could that possibly be? So Gemara gives a few answers. Answer number one, Amar Abelazar, Shimshon shenis ganeba ksiv be Yerida, Yehuda shenis aleba ksiv be Aliyah. So Shimshon, who ultimately over there, that's where he was with a Plishti woman, not a great story for Shimshon, so therefore it says a Yerida, not a physical geographical Yerida, but that's where he had done something inappropriate. But Yehuda, who had an Aliyah in Timnah, because that's where he admitted that he, right, just to review the mice of Yehuda and Tamar, so Tamar, who was married to Yehuda's sons, Aaron Onan, ultimately, she dresses up as a Zona, and Yehuda is with Tamar. And then we know the story goes that they find out that Tamar was clearly, she gets pregnant, she's with some man, so they declare that she's going to be Chayev Srefa. And then she gives Yehuda the opportunity to let everybody know that he was the one who was with her, to let her off the hook. So she sends Yehuda the three simanim, the three things that indicate that he really was the one who was with Tamar. And Yehuda, we know, he stands up and he admits Tzadka Memeni, that really she's pregnant from him, and therefore she should not be Chayev Misa. So Yehuda over there stood, he had a Kiddush Shem Shemayim that he stood up and admitted that it was really with him, even though it was very embarrassing for himself. So that was an Aliyah that happened for Yehuda at Timnah. So that's the first answer. The first answer is that Timnah, where is it geographically? So it's in a certain spot. For one person it says Yerido, one person says Aliyah, not because of going down geographically or up geographically, but one person had a spiritual downfall and one person had a spiritual uplifting. Answer number two, Rav Shmuel bar Nachmani Amar, Shtei Timnayos Haya. An easy answer. There were two places called Timnah, Chada B'Yerida v'Chada B'Aliyah. Two different places, and therefore two geographical locations. And Rav Papa Amar, a third answer, Chada Timnah Havai. Only one place called Timnah, but Asi Mehai Gisa Yerida, the Asi Mehai Gisa Aliyah. It was in like the middle of a mountain. So like halfway up the mountain was this place called Timnah. So if you're coming from the bottom, you have to have an Aliyah. You have to go upwards to get to Timnah. If you're coming from the top, you have to go downwards to get to Timnah. So it's going to be a Yerida. And there are other places that have this. Could go in Verdonia, Ubei Bari, Veshoka Dinersh, three other places that also were situated in the middle of a mountain. And therefore, it could be an Aliyah for one person and a Yerida for another person. So that's three answers to the Stira by Timnah being an Aliyah or Yerida. But that's the turning point of our Gemara. That the Pasuk by Shimshon says that it was a Yerida. Pasuk by Yehuda says that it was an Aliyah. And now the Gemara is going to use that as an opportunity to discuss a whole lot of information about the Maisa of Yehuda and Tamar. So Gemara continues, a pasuk by Tamar, the pasuk says, Vateshev bePesach Einayim, that Tamar was sitting by the Pesach Einayim, right, sitting as a zona, but so what does it mean that she was bePesach Einayim? What is bePesach Einayim? So Amar Alachsandri, Malami Shaholcha V'yashva La bePischo Shel Avraham Avinu. What's Einayim? Is it the name of a place? No, it's referring to she was by the tent of Avraham in that location, which is a place called Einayim, because it's a place of Makom Shekol Einayim Tzofos Leroso, a place that everybody was always looking towards. Avraham was known for his Achnasas Orchim, and therefore everybody would always go to that place. So when it says Teisha bePesach Einayim, it means that she was going to Avraham's tent, meaning she wanted to be part of Klal Yisrael. Rav Chanan Amar Rabbi, Makom Hu Sheshmo Einayim. No, it is a place. It's the name of a place. The name of a place is called Einayim. V'chein Hu Omar Tapuach V'Hayinim. That we see that there are places that were called with the name of Einayim. So what's the Lashon of Einayim? Either it's a reference to Avraham's tent, or it was literally the name of a place. Or answer number three, Rav Shmuel Bar Nachmani Amar, Shenasna Einayim Lidvarea Kishetava. And she was very careful. She had answers to all of Yehuda's questions. So Yehuda sees Tamar. He doesn't know it's Tamar. She's dressed up as a Zona. And so before he's with her, he asks her all these, a whole interview about all these different questions about her. And she was Nasna Einayim. She had a good answer to all of his questions. Amar La Hashem and Nachris At. So Yehuda asked Tamar, just as a Zona, are you, maybe you're not Jewish? She said, no. Amar Le Giyores Ani. I'm a Giyores. Rashi says that she is separated. She doesn't do Avodah Zarah. That's perhaps enough to be labeled as a convert in the times of Pre-Matan Torah. So she had an answer to that question. Then he said, Shema Eishes Eishat. He asked her, maybe you're married, so I can't be with you if you're married to somebody else. So she said, no, Amrale Penuya Ani. Nope, I never got married. I'm single. Then he asked her, Shema Kibil Bechavicha Kiddushin. He said, maybe your father was Mekabel Kiddushin for you. Know that if somebody's a katana, that the father is allowed to accept Kiddushin and marry off his daughter. She's in his Rishus. So maybe you don't know. Right? You tell me you're single because you never got married. Maybe your father got married you off and you just didn't realize. So no, Amar Le Yisoma Ani. Nope, Ami Yisoma, my father passed away a long time ago, even before I was very young, and therefore it's impossible that I was married off either by my father. Then he asks, Shema Tameya At, maybe you're a Tameh as a Nida. So she says, no, I'm Amrele Tahora Ani. Nope, I'm not, I'm Tahor. So therefore she had an answer. She had an answer to each of his questions. He asked her, maybe you're Tameh, maybe you're not Jewish, maybe you're married. She had an answer, she had a way to answer all of his questions. And that's what the Pasuk is referring to. There's a big question that the Achronim ask about the fact that he asks, maybe your father married you off. Because she already admitted the fact that she's a Gioris. She converted. We know the halacha is that Gershon is Gayer, Kekatan Shinoladami. If somebody converts, she has no halachic relationship to any of her relatives. All her relatives are not considered related to her anymore. So in general, a Jewish woman and a Jewish father, the father is allowed to marry off the daughter to Kiddushin, but if somebody converts, that father isn't your father anymore. So the father isn't allowed to still marry her off. So that's a question that the Achronim ask. Why would he even ask about the father marrying her off? And once she admits that she's converted, that's not how that works. Yeah, what's up?
How is Tahara pre-Matan Torah work?
That is a good question. I'm not sure. Did they go to the mikvah? Or did they just have a Nida Taraisa? I'm not sure. That's a good question.
Well,
I guess Lechora have to go to mikvah.
She was a gear, so she went to...
Right, they have to have mikvah for the gear. That's a shaila. They have to do all the things that we do to be mekabel mitzvos and to Mila and Tvila for Geirus. That there's a machlokas about what Geirus was like pre-Matan Torah. I don't think that the Tvila was necessary for that. But it's a good question about the Tahora. And on the topic of the fact that she says that she was a Yesoma, and therefore that her father never married her off, so Rashi uses this opportunity to point out how you shouldn't ask, how is Tamar allowed to be with Yehuda? After all, wasn't she his daughter-in-law? Tamar was married to Yehuda's two sons, so obviously Yehuda doesn't know that this is Tamar. He doesn't know who she is, so he's not asking that question. But we can ask that question. Tamar, what are you doing? This is your father-in-law. You can't be with Yehuda. So Rashi points out, perhaps, that the Gemara, what she answers in this string of answers could help us answer that question. So Rashi points out that perhaps since her father never married her off because her father passed away a long time ago, so how did she ever get married to Aaron Onan? Perhaps that was a Kiddushin Midirabanan. The halacha is that usually Midoraisa, the father can marry off his daughter. Once the father's out of the picture, the father passes away, then the mother and brothers can also be Mekadesh this girl, but only a Kiddushin Midirabanan. And then she can do Mian, she can refuse that Kiddushin, but it's not a real concrete Kiddushin. So says Rashi, yeah, she married Aaron Onan, but that was only a Kiddushin Midirabanan from her mother and brothers, and she has the opportunity to do Mian, to uproot, to annul that marriage. So don't ask, is she his daughter-in-law? She is not his daughter-in-law, because the marriage that she had was a Kiddushin Midirabanan, which she had the ability to uproot. That's what Rashi points out over here to answer that question.
I don't understand the question exactly. I thought the whole point of that was that she was orchestrating for him to do Yibam.
So that's what the Chizkuni and then the Rashba and Yavamos answered that question. That they say that over here it was a quasi-Yibam. And so in general, we know Yibam in general, and you can't marry your brother-in-law. Esh Ezach is Aser, but Yibam makes it Mutter, and perhaps even a mitzvah to marry your brother-in-law. And so over here as well, where it was a quasi-Yibam, so perhaps in general it's an Iser Kal, also an Iser to be with your daughter-in-law, but the mitzvah of Yibam overrided it. So we've different ways to answer the question, why wasn't she Kalasso? Rashi, you can also ask, is there really Yibam over here? Is this really considered Yibam? So Rashi is assuming that perhaps it's not considered Yibam, and therefore you can answer because they weren't really daughter-in-law, mother-in-law, or you can say they were considered Kalasso, was mother-in-law, daughter-in-law, father-in-law, daughter-in-law, but the mitzvah of Yibam overrides that issue. So usually not. So that's the question is, Yibam pre-Matan Torah.
There's no brothers. Is there any other relative? Or
not post-Matan Torah. That's not how Yibam would usually work. But the Rishonim assume that perhaps pre-Matan Torah, this was considered like Yibam, that even though there were no brothers left, the father to step in would still be a Hakamas Shem of the... That's the question, though. And the Ramban actually proves from here and says, no, we see from here that when it comes to Bnei Noach, there is no Isser Kalasso. There's no Isser of the Erva to be with your daughter-in-law. All the Arayos that we think of that are due to marriage, those are only true by a Yisrael, but not true by a Ben Noach. By a Ben Noach, the Arayos are like blood relatives. But that's the Ramban actually proves from over here that perhaps there is no Isser Kalasso in the first place.
Okay,
but yeah, so...
You're putting out a little digression with the Yibam. What about with Ross?
That's
that was always the thing when we do Chalitza. That was clearly not, I mean, I know it wasn't an Arval, But we said that if an Indian still take it, obviously, even though it wasn't a brother.
Right, yeah. So there, so we have examples
so
where it's not the real...
Post-Mandara, so
right.
I thought there's still a lot of Indian of Yibum, even if there isn't necessarily direct mitzvah Yibum.
I know, but to say that that would override the generally Suri Merva...
No, it wouldn't override any Yisra Erva. Yisra Erva clearly not.
Right.
I'm saying the Kalasa didn't apply to pre-Mandara, but post-Mandara, it seems there's still at least, like, from there, there would be some type of Yibum, even if you're not, like...
Right.
Like,
yep. Yeah, it's a good question.
I would think.
A good question, yeah, because we learned the dinim of Chalitza from Yibum. So that's a good question. Why is that considered in that post-Matan Torah? But definitely, Lamaisa, nowadays Yibum does not look like that, but these are things that are akin to the Maisa Yibum. Okay, now a new tangent for a bit. Since we mentioned that Tamar went to the area of the tent of Avram Avinu, so Gemara goes on another tangent to talk a bit about Avram. The Gemara says, "Vayita Eshel Be'er Sheva," that Abraham planted a tree. What was the nature of this tree? So Amar Eish Lakish Malamid Sha'asa Pardes Venata Bo Kol Mine Megadim. Eish Lakish says that he planted a whole orchard with a whole different variety of wonderful foods. Rav Yehuda, Rav Nechemya, Veva Machlokes. Chadamar Pardes, Vechadamar Punduk. Machlokes, whether it was an orchard that was planted over there, physically planting trees in orchard, or no, maybe it wasn't literally a tree. He planted a punduk. He put up an inn, a hotel to take care of people. I think Rashi says in Al Torah, Eishel is a Rashi Tevos of Achila, Shtia, and Levia. He gave him food to eat and things to drink and took care and escorted them. So that perhaps it wasn't Lavdafka, a literal tree. It was a punduk, an area where people would be taken care of. Gemara says, Bishlam Alamanda Amar Pardes, Hainu Dechsev, Vayita. The pasuk says, Vayita, it was planted. You can't forget the pasuk. So how do you I understand if it was an orchard, he planted the orchard. Lamanda Amar Punduk Mai Vayita. How do you plant a hotel? Kidix, the very answer is no. Kidixe Vayita Ahale Apadunano. That the Pasuk refers to planting a tent. So Vayita could also be a reference to building something, to putting up a tent, to putting up an inn. The Lashon of Vayita is not so troubling. And the pasuk continues, "Vayikra b'sham b'shem Hashem kel olam." The pasuk over there talking about Avram and his achnasas orchim that he called out b'shem Hashem. Amar Eish Lakish, "Al tikri vayikra." Don't say that Avram called out. Ella, right now in Yudam and Beis, Ella vayakri melamed shehikri Avraham Avinu l'shmo shel Hakadosh Baruch Hu bepeh kol over vishav. It wasn't Avram calling out b'shem Hashem, but Avram got his guests to call out and to thank Hakadosh Baruch Hu for all of the food. Kate said, how did he do this? La achar sha'achlu v'shasu. After all the guests ate from Abraham's hachnasas orchim, so amdu l'barcho. They stood up to give Avram a bracha. But Amalami said to them, v'chi mishaliyah chaltem. Did you eat from my food? No, mishal alokei olam achaltem. You ate from HaKadosh Baruch Hu's food. So hodu v'shivchu u'barchu l'misha amar v'haya olam. You should appropriately give thanks and praise to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the one who created the world. He is the one who gave you all this wonderful food. So that's how the Gemara describes Avram's Orchim, which also led to teaching people about the power of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That was our tangent about Avraham Avinu. So we had Shimshon, that shifted us to Yehuda and Tamar, that had a mini tangent about Avraham, and I think Gemara is going to go back for most of this Amud talking about the Maisa of Yehuda and Tamar. So the pasuk, Gemara quotes the next pasuk, Vayireha Yehuda Vayachshaveha Lizona Ki Kisasa Panel. Right, the pasuk describes that Yehuda saw Tamar, but he didn't recognize her because he thought that she was a zona. Ki kisses up on Neha because she was covering her face. Right, the pasuk said, the pasuk says she was covered, and therefore he couldn't recognize who she was, and therefore he assumed that she was a zona. But the Gemara asks, is also in Rashi on Chumash. Gemara asks, Mishum de kisses up on Neha chashva la zona, because she covered her face, she was covered up. That's why he assumed that she was a zona. I would have assumed that zonas are usually more uncovered. How does covering your face imply that you're a zona? So Amravi Elazar she kisses up on Neha bebeis chameha. No, it's because back right now she's uncovered because she's a zona, and he saw her face, but he didn't recognize her because previously when she was in his house and she was in her father-in-law Yehuda's house, she always was very tsanua and covered her face, and therefore now that she was uncovered and her face was out in the open, Hipasha didn't recognize her because he was used to her face being covered, to looking different, to looking more tsanua. De Amar Rav Shmuel Bar Nachmeni, Amar Rav Yonasan, Kol Kala Shehit Tzanua Bebeis Chameha. As we see that the Rav Yonasan says, any Kala who is Tzanua, she dresses very modestly in her father-in-law's house, Zocha Veyotzan Mimena Melachim Veneviim. They're Zocha to have kings and Neviim be their descendants, Minalan Mitamar. And this we learn from Tamar, who we just described was very Tzanua in her father-in-law's house. How do you know that Tamar had Neviim and Melachim? So Neviim Dechsev Chazon Yeshua Yeshayahu ben Amoz, that Yeshaya, we're going to prove in a second, came from Tamar, and he was a Navi. And Melachim, me David, because ultimately David came from Tamar, and he was obviously a Melech. The Amar of Levi, Davar Zem Mesores Biadenu Me'avosenu, we have a Mesorah, that Amoz and Amtia Achim Havu. That Amoz and Amtia were brothers. This is trying to explain. We said that, oh, I don't know that Neviim came from Tamar. Oh, the Pasuk says that Yeshaya ben Amoz was from Tamar. So who says that Yeshaya ben Amoz was from Tamar? How do you know that Yeshaya, this Navi that we're pointing to, was really from the descendants of Tamar? So there's a Mesorah that Amoz, who was the father of Yeshaya, was brothers with Amtia. Amtia was also, he was a Melech Yehuda. He was definitely from the Zera David. So that Mitzorah tells us that Yeshaya was also from Tamar, so therefore we have a proof that Neviim and Melachim came from Tamar because she was a Tzanua in her father-in-law's house. So that's how the Gemara answers, why is it the fact that she was covered up imply that she was a Zona? So no, since she was Tzanua in her father-in-law's house, that's how he didn't recognize her. The Pesukim then continue that he mutzeis. That then the Lashon Himutzeis, the Pasuk is referring to how she was sent out, and how she this is how she revealed to Yehuda that he was the one who was with her. But the Lashon of Mutzeis sounds like it means like the Lashon of Metzia, like she found something. Gemara asks, he mitutzeis mi barile. It should have said that she went out to Yehuda to tell him that he was the one. Why does it say he mutzeis, which is a Lashon of Metzia? It should say he mitutzeis, which is a Lashon of Yitzia, to go out. So what's the Lashon of Metzia of finding have to do with anything over here? So Gemara says, Amar Vilazar, la'achar shenimtzu simaneha. So after she found the simanim, again, which is the proof. The proof that this really was from Yehuda, Yehuda's three simanim. So once she found those simanim, that was her way to prove to Yehuda that he was the one that was with her. So that's her ticket to freedom. But then Basamael, right, the evil Malach of Edom, came Virichkan, and he separated her from them. So she found these simanim, which were her ticket to freedom, of innocence, and then the Malach Samael came and threw them away, and she didn't have them anymore. But then, Ba-Gavriel, the Kirban. Then Gavriel, who's the good Malach, he came and brought those simanim back to her to give her back her innocence, and Hainu Dechsiv, so that explains the Lashon of the Pasuk, he mutzeis, that she found something. What did she find? She found the simanim, which previously the Malach had sent away, then another Malach came and brought them back. That's the Lashon of Metzia over here. And Gemara uses this whole back and forth to explain, Hainu dechsiv lamnatzeach al Yonas ilim rechokim leDavid mechtam. A very strange pasuk which describes a Yonas ilim rechokim, a silent dove that was distant leDavid mechtam. What does this pasuk mean? So Gemara says this is referencing this maestro we just explained. Amar Rav Yochanan mishash and esrachku simanah naasis keyona ilames. Who's the silent dove this pasuk refers to? It refers to Tamar, who was forced to be silent because the simanim, which were her tickets to freedom, were sent away. So therefore, she was stuck. She had nothing to say anymore. She had nothing left to prove her freedom. That's the Yona Ilemes. It's referring to Tamar herself, who was forced to be silent when the simanim were taken away by the evil Malach Samael. And the end of that pasuk says the David Mechtam. What does that mean, the David Mechtam? So Gemara explains a few different pshatim. Number one, Sheyatza Mimena David Shahaya Mach Vitam Lakol. So David Mechtam means that she's going to ultimately have David, who was Mach Vitam. He was a very humble, a very shalem person. Even though he became a melech, he was still very humble. So that's a Mach Vitam as a reference to David's humility. Davar Acher, a second answer, Mechtam Shahaisa Makaso Tama. The second pshat of Mechtam means that he was Makaso Tama. Right? The Mako, which is the reference to the usual Mako Mila, where most males have a Maka, they have a wound from their Bris Mila, but he was Makaso Tama. He had no wound over there because David was born with a Bris Mila. He was Nolad Mahum. And the third answer, Davaracher, what does Aved Mechtam mean? So Mechtam Kishem Shebekat Nuso, Hikten Atzmo, Eitzel Mishagadol, Mimenu, Lom Motora. Just like when David was younger, before he was king, he was still willing to learn Torah from anybody, anyone who was Gadol Mimenu, Vatorah, still, Kach Begdulaso, even when he got older, he still had that same humility. So Mechtam, his humility was complete, whether he was young, whether he was older and a king, he was still always very, very humble. Those are three answers to what Mechtam means. Either he was humble, he was no lie with the Bris Milah, or that his humility was complete from his youth until he got older and became a king. But that second answer is fascinating. The second answer, that David was born no lad mahul. Anyone know a Gemara which implies that David, any Gemaras about David and his Bris Milah come to mind? Beis HaMerechetz, exactly. Gemara Menachos, Mem Gimel. Gemara Menachos says, David was so depressed because he was in the Beis, this is my favorite Ha'ara of the whole day. David was in the, he was in the Beis HaMerechetz. He was so depressed, he was in the bathhouse, he had none of his clothes on. He was depressed because he had no mitzvos anymore. He didn't have his tzitzis on, didn't have his tefillin on. He was Aram mina mitzvos, so he was so depressed until the Gemara says, he looked down and saw his Makom HaMila and said, ah, at least I still have my Bris Mila on me, and that cured his depression, that lifted his spirits. So the Marsha asks, what are you talking about? What Bris Milah? According to our Gemara, David never had a Bris Milah. Why did he look down and when he was comforted by his Bris Milah? According to our Gemara, he was no lad mahul. He never even had a Bris Milah. That's a Bam Kasha, the Marsha. How could he be excited about his Bris Milah? He never had a Bris Milah. So the Marsha gives two answers. One answer is that there is a concept of Hatafas Dam Bris. And if somebody already has a Bris Milah, then there's a mitzvah to draw some blood. This comes up l'maisa by like a ger. Somebody wants to convert, but they already had a Bris Milah when they were not Jewish. So now they're off the hook. They get to convert without any Bris Milah. So no, they do a tafas dam bris. They draw some blood from the makom hamilah. There's a machlokas in the Gemara and Shabbos about somebody who's no lad mahol. If you're born without a bris, without an arla, without the need for a bris mila, there's a machlokas in Shabbos whether you have to do a tafas dam bris on that person or not. So the Marashah says lefi the shita that holds that you need to do a tafas dam bris on somebody who's no lad mahol. So that was the maisa mila that got David excited. He didn't have the full bris mila, but he had the tafas dam bris, and that's what excited David in the Gemara in Menachos. So there's no stira. He was born without a bris Mila, but he had the Hatafas Dam Bris, and that's he was born with the Bris Mila. Hatafas Dam Bris was the Maisa Mila that he got excited about. But the Marashah gives a second answer, which is really a Lamdisha answer. There's a Hakira that there is perhaps Tzvei Dinim in the mitzvah of Bris Mila. If I asked you, what's the mitzvah of Bris Mila? So you'd say, oh, the Maisa Mila on day 8. That's when the mitzvah happens, that the Moal comes as your shaliach, and he does the Maisa Mila, the cutting. That's perhaps the mitzvah of Bris Mila. But if that's the mitzvah, then the Mefarshim asks, why was David excited? He looks and he reminds himself of the Makom HaMila, but you're not doing that mitzvah right now. That's a mitzvah that he did many ages ago, decades ago. But why didn't he look at his arm and say, ah, geshmak, the arm that I put on tefillin this morning gets me excited. Right? No, that happened earlier. So why is the Makom HaMila a mitzvah that happened right now? That's a mitzvah that happened when you were 8 days old, way, way long time ago. So the Achronim, the Beis HaLevi, and the Achronim discuss, perhaps there's Tzvei Dinim to the mitzvah of Bris Milah. On the one hand, yes, there is the mitzvah of the Maisa Milah, but there's also a mitzvah, Nimsheches, a mitzvah that continues throughout your lifetime. Some say that it's the mitzvah of being Mahul, or perhaps it's a mitzvah of just not being an Arel. So perhaps the fact that David was not an Arel, he didn't have an Arla, he had nothing. So perhaps that itself is also a mitzvah, that David was being Mekayim, and that we're all being Mekayim every single day of our lives. So Mara's question, so the Achronim's question is, how is he nolad mahol and excited about his mitzvah of Bris Mila? Answer number one, he had a tafas dam bris. Answer number two, the mitzvah of just not being an arel is a mitzvah nemsheches that applies every single day of our lives. It's my favorite. That was great. Okay, so that's the David being nolad mahol. Where now continues, v'hi shalcha el chameha lemor la'ish asher eile lo anohi hara. So Tamar then sends the simanim to Yehuda and puts it in his court and says, the person who owns these three things, that's the person who got me pregnant, putting it in his court to have the opportunity to choose to admit to everybody that it was him or to not. So the Tamar asks, just tell him straight up, just say, it was you. Why do you have to say, oh, the person who owns these things, that's the one who impregnated me. So Amar Rav Zutra Bar Tovia, Amar Rav, Bar Mila, Amar Rav Chana, Bar Bizna, Amar Rav Shimon Chasida, Amar Rav Yochanan, Amar Rav Shimon Ben Yochai. So they all say, why didn't she tell them straight up? Because Noach lo lo adam she yapil asmo l'sol kipshan ha'esh. It's better for somebody to be thrown into a kipshan ha'esh. Ba'al yalbim p'nei chaveiro b'rabim. And not to embarrass somebody in public. It was a fear. If she said straight up, it was Yehuda, so maybe that the word would get out, the shliach would tell everybody. It would be embarrassing for him. So we know, Tamar. We learn from Tamar. She was willing to get the punishment of Strefa. That's what she was judged to get, a Misa of Strefa. She was willing to get the Misa of Strefa as opposed to embarrassing him in public, because it's better to get thrown into a fiery furnace, as opposed to being Malbin Pnechavero Barabin. There is I'm going to go out and say, perhaps one of the most famous Tosas in Sota is right over here. The top Tosas. Anyodam Abiz. Says a wild conclusion. Tosfos ask a good question. The Gemara says in Sanhedrin Emsachim, there are three averos to give your life for. Gili Arayos, Shvichas Damim, Avodah Zarah. Someone puts a gun to your head and says, bow down to this Avodah Zarah. Take the bullet. Take the gun to the head, because you're supposed to be giving up your life for these three mitzvos, Yehareg Va'al Yavor. Tosfos ask, what about our Gemara? Our Gemara says you're supposed to jump into a fiery furnace as opposed to embarrassing somebody. So I would say, it's not literal. It's an agatha. It doesn't mean you have to actually jump into a fiery furnace to give up your life to prevent somebody from being embarrassed. That's not what Tosfos answer. Tosfos answer, a wild answer. Ein achanami. You're right. It would have fit perfectly on the list of things you're supposed to give your life for, but it couldn't list that as an example. Why? Because it's ein amifureshes betorah. The lo nakat ela averos hamifureshos. A technical answer that, oh, it didn't mention it because the list only included things that are mifuresh explicit in the Torah. And this example, while it's true, according to Tosfos, it's true you're supposed to give up your life instead of embarrassing somebody in public, but it didn't make the cut of the list in Sanhedrin and Psachim because it wasn't Mefurish Bekra, which is wild. A technical reason why it's not on the list, but really it is. Yehareg Vayavor. That's the Shita of Tosfos. And he's not alone. And I'm not the only Rishon who says that. The Rabbeinu Yonah in the Shari Tshuva says that perhaps you're supposed to give up your life instead of embarrassing somebody. Why? Because it is Avizrayhu Deshvichas Damim. That not only for the Gimel Chamuros, for the big three Averos, you have to give up your life, but even for offshoots, for ancillary versions of these Averos, you have to also give up your life. And what's an Avizrayu de Shvichas Damim? An act that's sort of akin to Shvichas to murder? And Mabib Chavich Avera Barab. Rabbeinu Yonah says that embarrassing somebody is like murder, and therefore it's also Yehareg V'Ayavor. And that's how the Aruch Lener explains that also you could answer Tosfos' question. Tosfos asks, why isn't it in the list in Sanhedrin? We know that there are three averos to give your life for, Avodah Zarah, Gilei Arayos, and Shvichas Damim. Why isn't it say, Malbim Pnei Chaveiro Barabim? So say the Achronim, based on this Rabbeinu Yonah, it is on the list. What's the list? Avodah Zarah, Gilei Arayos, Shvichas Damim. Ding, 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 that's it. Shvichas Damim, murder, is when it's telling us that even Malbim Pnei Chaveiro Barabim, to embarrass somebody and make them white in the face, is like you murdered them, and that was on the list of the three things that are Yehareg V'Ayavor. So you have Tosfos and Rabbeinu Yonah, who seem to say literally you're supposed to give up your life instead of embarrassing somebody in public, which is wild. It's wild. It's extraordinary. The Meiri says over in Maseches Shabbos, right? No, it's in Maseches Brachos. Sorry, Brachos Ben Gimel also says this. Then the Meiri says, no, it's just Derech Tzachos, as we would have all thought. It's an exaggeration to tell us the importance of not embarrassing people. It's not literally you're supposed to give up your life, but it was just an exaggeration, a Derech Tzachos. And Rav Asher Weiss, he has a piece about this in a Sefer Bereishis, I think it's in Mem Gimel maybe, where he says that there's no way. He tries to reread Tosfos and to reread Rabbeinu Yonah as saying really that they just meant that it's very serious, not literally going to give up your life for it, because it's hard to even fathom the fact that you're going to give up your life instead of embarrassing somebody. You have to, there's a halacha of rodef, that if you see somebody who's about to go kill someone, then you're allowed to go kill the guy who has a gun in his hand to prevent him from killing somebody. So Rav Asher says, you're going to tell me if you see a guy who's about to go embarrass someone, you can shoot him in the head because he's a rodef, and you can kill somebody who's about to embarrass somebody else because he's shvichas damim? Or somebody of the Achronim ask, we have a halacha that a kohen shaharagas hanefesh lo yisa es kapav. A kohen can't duchen if he murdered somebody. So you're going to go say, sorry, you can't duchen because you murdered someone. I saw last week you embarrassed this guy in public and he felt awful and he can't duchen anymore. So how far are you going to take this? Is it literally like shvichas damim, and you're going to actually say that it's real murder and you're harag v'yavar? So there are Yishonim who seem to say it. Lamaisa, don't try this at home. But there are those on the books who seem to say it, and Rav Asher Weiss can't believe it. I heard a very funny story from Rav Schechter. You have a question?
I'm just wondering if you can flip that. You can't stop a Cohen from looking ever because it'll embarrass him.
Oh, so that, and then you'll be the one embarrassing everybody. Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, that's a big shiloh. When people aren't supposed to duchen and you have to call them out about it, somebody who's too old and they, that they can't stand, it's a big shiloh.
Also, like, I mean, Tamar was right. Like, Yehuda deserves it. Like, where do we draw the line? Is a basin not okay? Like, outing, abuse and things like that? Like it's embarrassing, but it's the right...
He deserves it, right?
Like, it's the right judgment.
Right, that's a good question. Yeah, I don't think we would say not to... If somebody is really chayav... Right, so yeah, so Yehuda, this was really just to save her. There was nothing, right, so it was to save her own life. Perhaps she had the ability to put it into her own hands. But if somebody is a murderer who hurt other people, maybe that's the chilek, that it was for her own self. But yeah, if there are other factors, that's a good point.
So you're saying Yehuda was allowed to have relations with her?
Yeah, that's a big discussion in the Achronim. What exactly? Why is the fact that it was Yehuda make it okay? Right, so some say like the Yibam thing. They said it was like Yibam. Some say that the Isser was only to be with a non-Jew, and that was the whole hullabaloo about Tamar. She was with a non-Jew, and therefore Yehuda saying that it was him, that he was Jewish.
But they didn't know that.
Maybe right, but they assumed. They assumed.
Maybe she was with a non-Jew.
Yeah, that was the rove was they assumed she was a non-Jew.
You know,
but yeah, it's a big question.
One other thing with Tamar is that she. The subtlety was actually very brilliant and very poetic in that the fact that he did not give Shela to her, and so was in fact already a death for her. That the mind ain't a meta anochi, right? When we learn from Rachel, if I don't have a baby, if I don't have a child, it's as if I'm dead. And so that was very common in Near Eastern time, Near Eastern Mesopotamian times of that time.
Right.
That if you didn't have a child, you're already considered kamet. And so. I think there's a poetry there, the fact that she's being selfish, because if you don't identify yourself now through this, I'm already dead. So I don't have a child.
Well, yeah, that's mild.
There's reflections that say that he originally did not want to do it tomorrow. He actually pulled himself away.
In the Malach part.
The Malach.
Yeah.
Made him...
It was our destiny. That was going to be for... That was going to be... In Mashiach. But yeah. Okay.
Story.
I want to tell it, but we only 5 minutes left. Okay, I'll tell you very quick. So the Rebbeinu Yonah says
you
that
can
even
run over.
I could. I don't want to get shot.
We'll give you an extra 5 minutes.
Okay.
We won't embarrass you.
For this, it's worth it. So Rebbeinu Yonah says that even for Abiz Rayu de Avodah Zarah Gilei Rayos v'Chasamim, not just for literal Gilei Rayos, but even for an Abiz Rayu, an offshoot of that, you also have to give up your life. So Rav Shaktel tells a story. Not just like a Meitzah, he knows the guy who's in the story. There was a guy and a girl who were on a date. They went to an amusement park and they were on a Ferris wheel and they were towards the top of the Ferris wheel and then the park shut down and they forgot about them and they're trying to call down to get us out of here and no one heard them and it got late and then the girl turns to the guy and says, Taka, it's Yichud. I think you have to jump. And then he's like, I'm not jumping. And then so she proceeded to climb down the Ferris wheel and then she fell and then she broke her arm and then she tried to sue the amusement park company and saying that it was her religion that she had to jump off to Yehari Gval Yavar for Abizrayu, perhaps Yichud is an Abizrayu de Gilei Arayos, and therefore she had to halachically get out. That was her claim in court. And then she had to find a rev to back that up. But that was the... Well, medicine, no. So maybe if you hold Yichud as Abizrayu, the Gilei Arayos, you have to jump off the Ferris wheel to save yourself from a Yichud situation. Okay, that was only 1 minute. Okay. Was that worth the going over time? I hope so.
Who was the rope that backed her up?
I don't know. It was not a shit, no. Okay, so let's keep going. So the Gemara continues to conclude the whole Agata about Yehuda and Tamar. So the pasuk says, "Haker na," that she sends to Yehuda the simanim. "Haker na," please recognize that this is from you. So now we're like two lines, the second to last skinny line. So Amar Rav Chama Rabbi Chanina, "Bahaker biser la aviv, bahaker bisruhu." This is like a mida keneged mida that Yehuda used the lashon of haker to inform his father Yaakov when they claimed that to told Yaakov that Yosef had been killed and recognized whose cloak this is, whose ketones is this. So he used the lashon of haker, and therefore the word haker was used to inform him about that he was the one who had to come clean over here. So it's like a mida keneged mida. But haker biser, as it says, haker na hakesones bincha, he asked Yaakov to recognize is this the ksones of Yosef, and therefore by Haker Bisruhu, it happened back to him that Haker Nalami, that he was asked to recognize who do these three simanim belong to. And the lashon was Haker Na, please recognize. So Mar says, Ein Na El Lashon Bakasha, that she was making a Bakasha from Yehuda to please recognize these are your simanim. So Amrale be Bakasha Mimcha, Haker Pene Borecha, Va'al Tale Meinecha Mimeni, that please recognize Hashem is watching. Recognize that this is really yours and come clean and don't hide your eyes from me. Really come and please tell the truth. Pasuk says, "Vayaker Yehuda, Vayomer Tzadka Mimeni." And Yehuda recognizes it really was from him, and he says, "Tzadka, that really she's right and she's innocent. Mimeni, it's from me, and therefore we should not be killing Tamar." So Hanu da Amar Rav Chanan Bar Bizna Amar Rav Shimon Chasida. This is as they say, Yosef Shekideh Shem Shamayim B'Seser. Yosef was Mekadeh Shem Shamayim in private. He was not with Eshes Potiphar. That was a Kiddush Hashem in private. And therefore, Zachah V'Hosifu Lo Os Achas Mishmo Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They added one letter to his name. Tichsiv Edus B'Yehosef Samo. The Hey of Hashem's name was added to Yosef because of his small Shem Shamayim. Kiddush Shem Shemayim. So Yehuda Shekideh Shem Shemayim Beparhesya. So Yehuda, who was Mekadesh Shem Shemayim in public, so therefore Zacha V'Nigra Kulo Al Shmo Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. His whole name includes the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. His name is Yehuda. That includes the whole Yudke Vavke. That's a greater reward for the greater Kiddush Shem Shemayim that Yehuda did. And the Maharsha points out, wasn't he named Yehuda the whole time? Didn't Leah give him that name when he was born? How can you say, Yosef, he was always called Yosef. We added a hey later on. Wasn't this guy's name always Yehuda? So the Maharsha says, yeah, but she could have called him Odeh, because she said, Apam Odeh Hashem. We could have had one of the Shvatim named Odeh and all the kids running around named Odeh. But no, Hashem put it into her mouth to call him Yehuda because of this Kiyum Shemayim as a reward for the Mekadesh Shem Shemayim. And then the Marakhani was Kevin Shehoda Ba'amar Tzadka Mimeni. Once he was admitted to everybody, it was really from him. So Yatsa Sabaskol Ba'amra Ata Yitzal the Tamar Vishne Ba'neha Min Ha'or. The Baskol came and said that you saved Tamar and her two sons that she was pregnant with from the fire. So therefore, Chayecha Sha'ani Matzil Bischuscha Gimel Bibanecha. I'm going to therefore save three of your sons from a Min Ha'or from a fire. Ma'ninu. These are Hananya, Mishal, the Azariah, who were thrown into Kibshan Ha'esh because they didn't bow down to Nebuchadnezzar's Avodah Zarah. And therefore, the reward was that they were going to be saved bizchus Yehuda. Tzadka Mimeni, Yehuda said that it's really from me, he reveals the truth. So Mina Yada, Gemara asks, how does he know? In the Hanami, you were with Tamar, that you can admit to, but who says that she's a Zona? Maybe she was also with somebody else, and this child was really from somebody else. How do you know that it was really from you specifically? So Yada is a Baskol V'Amra Mimeni Yatsu Kivushim. So he didn't know confidently, but a Baskol came and finished his sentence and said, Mimeni, that really the Kivushim, the, these hidden things, this whole Maisa, really came from me. So the Baskol came in and really confirmed it for us. And Vasa concludes, Velo Yasaf Ola Daita, that she did not, interpreted as meaning that she didn't continue to be with him. And it sounds like it means that she, after this whole situation, she stopped being with him. But Gemara says no. Amar Shmuel Saba Chamua Derav Shmuel Bar Ami Mishmei Derav Shmuel Bar Ami, that they say Kivan Sheyada Shuv Lo Pasak Memena. Since the truth came out and it was really true that she was really L'shem Shemayim Niskavna, so therefore Lo Pasak Memena, he didn't stop living with her. Lo Yasaf means that he didn't cease to continue to live with Tamar. That as it says over Uktiv Hacha Velo Yasaf O Ladaita, Pasuk over here says Velo Yasaf Uktiv Hasam Kol Gadol Velo Yasaf, and it says by the shofar that it was a loud sound Velo Yasaf, it continued and did not cease, and so therefore he also continued to live with Tamar. Let's go just quickly to the bottom of the Amud, and then we'll stop for the day. The Mishnah then continued on Tes Amud Beis after the whole Midah Keneged Midah of Shimshon. Next on our list was Avshalom. So Amara says, and he was this guy, Besairo, he had gaiva from his hair, and that's what led to his death. Smyrna now tells us the story that we hinted to earlier. Tana Rabbanan, Avshalom Besairo, Marad, Avshalom rebelled, he sinned with his hair, he had gaiva because of his hair. What's the proof? Shene Amaru ke Avshalom lo haya ish yafe, there was no person as beautiful as Avshalom, uvigalcho es rosho, the haya miketz yamim li yamim. He would shave his head, his hair, every once a year. Rashi points out he was a Nazir, but he was a Nazir forever. Yeah. A Nazir Olam, Rashi points out. Rashi, thought of your question. He was a Nazir Olam, and therefore a Nazir Olam is supposed to shave once a year. If you're a temporary Nazir, then you don't get that p'tur, but a Nazir forever, it would get out of hand. He's allowed to shave once a year. That's what Rashi explains over here. Asher Yigalach, Ki Kaveh Alav, it was very heavy on his head. Vigalcho, and how heavy was it? Vishaka Lese'er Rosho, Masayim Shekalim, Be'Eben HaMelech. It was as heavy as 200 Shekalim, as weighed by the Eben HaMelech. What's the Eben HaMelech? The Gemara explains, Tana Eben, Sha'anche Taveria, Va'anche Tzipori, Shoklimba. It's the stone that they would use to measure weights. And so this hair was so heavy, it was as heavy as 200 Shekalim, as measured by this Eben HaMelech. And that's the source that he had, this long, beautiful hair, and therefore the Chazal said that he had inappropriate gaiva, that was his chait through his hair, and therefore, lefikach nitla besairo, therefore he was stuck hanging by his hair. As the Pasuk says, Shenamar, by karei Avshalom ufnei Avde David, Avshalom happened in front of the Avde David, Avshalom rochev al hapered, he was riding on his mule, vayavo hapered tachas shovech ha'ela hagedola, and the mule rode him right into a tree, an elm tree with big branches, thick branches, and then when he got stuck, Vayochaz Rosho Ba'ela, Vayutan Ben HaShamayim Uvein Ha'aretz, his head and his hair got stuck in that tree and the thick branches, and then Vahaperet Asher Tachtav Avar, and the mule kept on going. You can picture that he got stuck in the tree, the thing he was riding on, the mule kept on going, he's hanging there mid-air, hanging by his hair, so what do you do? And he's not supposed to cut his hair, he's a nazir. So what are you supposed to do? So the Mara says, Shakal Safsira Ba'al Mipsike. He took out a sword, he said, I have to save my life, I'm going to cut the hair to save myself and to get out of this very sticky predicament. But Tana Debe Rabbi Shmuel, he couldn't cut it. Why? Because Ba'osa Shah Nifka Sha'ol Mitachta. At that point, Gehenim opened up underneath him, so he was too afraid to cut himself free because he would fall into Gehenim, and so therefore he was stuck there, and the story we had in our Mishnah, the story ends that they, Yoav and his people found him, and they ended up stabbing him, cutting off his head, and that's what, that was his death. So his death came from being stuck in the tree from his hair, which he had sinned with. The last Indian for today, by Yirgaz HaMelech, when David heard that his son Avshalom, who tried to kill him, but when he heard that his son Avshalom died, he was very sad, he was very angry, by Yal Al Aliyas Hashar, by Yevki cried on the upper gates, Beko Amar Belechto, and as he was crying and walking around, he said, Bini Avshalom, Bini Avshalom, Mi Yitain Musi Ani Tachtecha, if only I could die in your place, Bini Lama, why happened to you, my son, or Avshalom, Bini, and then Bamelech, the next passage continues, Bamelech, La'at Espanav, David wrapped his face, by Yizak HaMelech Kol Gadol, Bini Avshalom, Avshalom, Bini, constantly crying out, Avshalom, my son, Avshalom. So Gemara asks, Hani Temanya Bini Lama, what are these eight Lashons of my son, Bini, telling us? So Shiva Da'aske Mi Shiva Medure Gehenim, the first seven calling outs of Bini were to get him out of these seven depths of Gehenim. What was number eight? The two different shitos. Ika, the Edoch, the last one, Ika da Amri de Karib Reshe Legabe Gufe. Some say that eighth Bini, that eighth tefillah, brought his head back to his body, that as he was killed, his head was separated from his body, and that last tefillah brought his head, to make it less of a bizayon, brought his head back to his body. Ika da Amri de Aise La'ama de Asi. And some say that eighth Bini actually got him out of Gehenim and into Olam Haba. So the first seven Bini got him out of Gehenim, and number eight got him to Olam Haba. I'll stop over here. We started off talking about Shimshon a bit. That shifted us to Yehuda and Tamar. A small tangent about Avram. And then back to Yehuda and Tamar about killing yourself for Pnechaver Barabin and David being Noah Mohol. And we ended off talking a bit about Avshalom and being killed in his hair. Shkaya. Yeah, of course.